North End and Colel, Shear, given on Sunday, 28th of October 2012, Yud Beis Cheshvan, Tovshin Ayin Gimel. The Shear is given by Gershon Heppner, and we're up to Tehillim, chapter Yud Ches, Posuk Kaftes, 29. Ki because you light up my candle, Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, Yagia Choshki will brighten my darkness. Yes, it's Posuk Kaftes. Because you give light to my candle, Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, Yagia Choshki, he'll brighten my darkness. So Rashi explains, what are we talking about? What is David talking about? Somehow, it seems somehow or another, David is saying that you've rescued me. Darkness is always an expression of danger and sorrow. And you give light to that. You give light to my candle and you brighten my darkness. He brightens up my darkness. Rashi explains that we're referring to a particular incident in the life of David. And that is an incident which is recorded in Shmuel Aleph, chapter Lamed, Pasuk Yud Zayin, where David fought a battle against Amalek. And interestingly enough, the Amalekim, they waged this war in a place called Tziklag, which is just a little bit north of Be'er Sheva. Amalek fighting Klal Yisrael in a place called Tziklag. Yeah. I've got a map here actually. Tziklag, you see, it's just down there, just a little bit north of Be'er Sheva. So it's marked on the map. So Tziklag is just north of Be'er Sheva, and they fought a war. So it's recorded in Shmuel Aleph chapter Lamed, Pasuk Yud Zayin. And we just had this pasuk in the Gemara in Brachas in the Omid Yomi Shir. Vayakim David mehaneshef ato erev lemacharosam. David smote them. He smote the Amalekim mehaneshef from neshef for ato erev until the evening lemacharosam of the next day. Well, the Gemara Gemara in Brachas Taf Gimel Omid Beis discusses what does it mean from neshef. What is this neshef? And the Gemara discusses the Gemara's initial thought and it means from the evening. Which is a bit strange because it says mehaneshef from evening va'alto erev until evening. So why lemacharosam the next day? So the Gemara is so the Gemara thinks it means from one night until the following night. Let's say from Sunday night to Monday night. But the Gemara, that's from one evening to the evening of the next day.
24 hours.
Yeah. But the Gemara rejects that because if that would be the pshat, then it wouldn't change. It would either say mehaneshef v'ad haneshef, or it would say meho erev v'ad erev. Why change from, why have one version neshef and the other one erev? So the Gemara instead.
Maybe from the night until sundown the following day, which is when the sun goes down. Erev is.
Yeah.
Towards the evening, not night.
You mean later on?
Yes.
Are you saying so neshef is earlier? Yeah. I don't think the Gemara says, I'm not sure, but I don't think the Gemara says that. I think the Gemara's maskana there, conclusion of the Gemara is that the word neshef can also mean morning, and it means from morning till night. Okay? However, there's a Medrash HaTov where on this pasuk, where Rabbi Shimon ben Levi says that really this battle took place, it was a much longer battle. It was two nights and one day. It was mehaneshef. Let me quote this to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. I'm Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Gaius Gadol shel Amalek bar el David. An enormous army of Amalek came to David. VaYadavid osim melchama imo. And David fought them shetei leilos v'yom echad. Two nights and one day. How does that work? Shneimar vayakim David mehaneshef atayev lemacharosam. So what does it mean? It means mehaneshef from one evening. The ad ha erev until the following evening, which is 24 hours later, le macharosam until the following morning. So it would work out, let's say the battle started on a Sunday night, the battle would last from Sunday night until Tuesday morning. Yeah, from Sunday night, mehaneshef, the ad ha erev until Monday night, and then le macharosam until the following morning.
36 hours.
36 hours. Your math is better than mine. 36 hours. Yeah. So work out to let's say if it was
the following morning.
So the morning after two nights. So there's actually machlokes here between the Gemara in Brachas Gimel Amud Beis that learns it was from morning till night, and this Medrash Shechatov which learns it was from one night until the morning after the second night. Let's say, e.g., Sunday night till Tuesday morning.
Two opinions.
Two opinions, absolutely, that's right. And then the Medrash Rabbah continues and says, "Umi heir lo ba'uson halelos." Who illuminated it? Who illuminated the war zone for David? Om Rabbi Shmuel ben Levi, Hakadosh Baruch Hu meir lo. Hashem brought light for him. So although it was dark, Hashem made it light for him, implying.
The advantage because it was light for him.
Exactly. David had the light, but the enemies could say, a bit like Choshech and Mitzrayim, the Egyptians wanted to die.
When he was fighting them.
When he was fighting Amalek. So, Miheir Lo, that's again from Rabbi Shimon Levi. I'm Rabbi Shimon Levi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meir Lo. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who lit up, who illuminated it for him. And that's the pshat in this pasuk. In our pasuk, Ki Atah Ta'ir Neiri, you've given me light. In our pasuk kaftes, Ki Atah Ta'ir Neiri, Hashem Nekaya Geh Choshki. It's Hashem who's lit up my darkness. It was darkness, it would have been, it's nighttime, it would have been dark. The war took place during two nights. But it was light for David, he had the advantage of light. This same Medrash is brought as well in the Medrash Rabbah, in Parshas Achrimos, in the Medrash Rabbah, it's Pek Kaf Aleph and it's Os Gimel, and it brings the same Medrash there, but it says how HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually illuminated that night. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mi Hoya Meir Lo, who lit up the nights for David? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bezikim Uverokim. Hashem illuminated the nights with Zikim, which are comets, and Barokim, which is lightning.
Yeah, but then, of course, that would have lit up the night for everybody.
For the Amalekim as well. I was wondering about that. So some kind of nace took place whereby only David benefited from it and not the Amalekim. Yeah, not the Amalekim. The Masilas David explains our pasuk that Ki Atah Ta'ir Neiri, you give light to my candle. I'll quote this from the Masilas David. Tishlach li Ezra, you send me help. While Yagia Choshki, you illuminate my darkness. Is Yoshieni Menatzor, you save me from troubles. So, now there's both expressions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending a rescue package to David. There's a strange Ibn Ezra on this pasuk, which I do not understand. The Ibn Ezra says, what does it mean, Ki Atah Ta'ir Neiri? Here's a quote from the Ibn Ezra. V'hu moshel l'mazalo hatov. This is a moshel, illuminating his candle. It's a moshel to David's good mazel. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent David good mazel. Good, maybe you could call it luck. He sent him good fortune. And then the moshel to that is simply that he illuminated my candle. Giving me light, it's an idea of the moshel. It's a moshel to David's haslacha. But the Ibn Ezra calls it mazel, which I found a bit strange. Okay. Very difficult piece of targum on this pasuk. Matul da'ant tanhar shiroga di Yisrael. Because you give light, you light up the lamp for Yisrael. Dimitafio v'galusa, who are drowning in galus. Da'ant hu morei dinahura di Yisrael. Because you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're the master of the light of Israel. Hashem Eloki, Hashem my God, Yafkinami will bring me out Mecheshka from darkness, Linahur to light. Yachminani v'nichomusi, he will show me, and I think this means my Nechomo, he'll show me comfort. Where? Da'almo da'asid lemesil tzadikaya, in the world which will eventually bring tzadikim. I'm not sure what the Targum means, so it's referring to Olam Haba. To the world that will eventually bring in tzaddikim, or whether he's simply saying, eventually the world will have tzaddikim only in it, and Hashem will show me that world. And that's how the Targum translates, Hashem nekai yagia choshki, he'll illuminate my darkness, i.e. he'll show me the world which is full of tzaddikim. The Medrash HaTov continues on this pasuk to define Ki Atah Ta'ir Neiri. Ki Atah Ta'ir Neiri, says the Medrash HaTov, b'Mordechai, you illuminate my candle, through Mordechai, Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, Yagia Choshki, you illuminate you bring light to my darkness. But Esther, reference to Esther. The Medrash HaTov doesn't give any word of explanation as to why we should refer this pasuk to Mordechai and Esther. So I saw two amazing pieces on this Medrash HaTov. What's the connection with Mordechai and Esther's story of Purim about illuminating the darkness? How does that fit in? So first of all, I saw from Reb Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, which is this sefer, beautiful, beautiful sefer. Dushinsky Chasidim, yeah. Reb Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky explains that that normally we would regard the true heroine of the Purim story has got to be Esther, or the true hero, the only hero you would think of the Purim story is Esther. Why? She put her life in her hands and she went off to Ahasuerus to plead on behalf of Klal Yisrael. However, the Gemara is very clear about this. It's a Gemara which is brought in, it's in Megillah. Oh, I didn't jot down the page. I think it's around Tesvav or Tesvav, I can't remember, that Mordechai learnt with Klal Yisrael. During those 3 days of Tanis, when Esther was preparing to go to Ahasuerus, and she was also fasting, of course, that during those 3 days, Mordechai learnt Torah, Barabim, and he gave public shiurim, and there's also a medrash, which I couldn't find, but I know it's somewhere, that Mordechai learnt Torah with children during those 3 days. You've seen that, yeah? And he was very much...
The children saved the day, they brought the salvation.
It's such a well-known medrash, and I couldn't find it. Anyway, so Mordechai learned with the children, learned Torah with the adults, and of course he led them all in tefillah as well. They're all davening and fasting and davening. And really, it was, in case you think that Esther was a one-man band, no, she wasn't. Mordechai was her major backup in Torah and tefillah. And therefore, who brought the light? Mordechai and Esther. Ki ata ta'ineri, you bring light, you light up my candle through Mordechai. And Hashem and Kaya Agia Choshki, you light up my darkness through Esther.
And it was the salvation, Mordechai and Esther.
They take the... Yeah, that's right. And that, of course, brought about, like, Hudim Hosa Ura. That brought about the eventual Ura of the rescue from the Purim story. That's right, yeah. So that's the piece of... that's Rabbi Yosef Dushinsky's pshat on this Medrash Shechetov, which says, Ki ato ta'ineri is a reference to Mordechai, and Hashem and Kaya Gea Choshki is a reference to Esther. However, I found in the Sefer on Tehillim of the Chasam Sofer, written by the Chasam Sofer, he explains, he has a huge arichas there, a massive long piece there in the Sefer of the Chasam Sofer. I don't think it's really his Pirush on Tehillim. I think someone else went through all the various Sfarim in the Chasam Sofer and connected what he wrote in those other Sfarim, his Droshas and so on, to particular Pesukim in Tehillim. And then he writes along the following lines, that we have in our pasuk two different things. We've got Ki ato ta'ineri, we have Hashem lighting up, giving light to my candle, and Yagia Choshki lighting up my darkness. He says, what's the difference? What's the difference between lighting a candle, ta'ineri, and Yagia Choshki illuminating my darkness? So he says as follows, we have a moshel, it's a moshel of two candles. You've got two candles, one of them is not lit at all, and the other one is lit, but then it goes out, and it's relit. And it goes out again, and again it's relit. He says, this is Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai, he was well known as one of the Gedolim. He was one of the Gedolim long before the Purim story ever happened, right? He was one of the Tzaddikim of that generation. He was known to be, he was a leader of that generation. Then along comes the whole Ma'aseh of Haman. Mordechai is this candle that's leading Klal Yisrael, but then the candle goes out. Haman comes along, Mordechai's candle, if you like, goes out. Mordechai fasts, his candle's relit. And this constant up and down, he's the moshel of the candles, is Mordechai represents the candle, or I should say the candle that keeps going out and being relit is a representation of Mordechai, while Esther is the candle that's never been lit at all. Why? Esther was an unknown. She wasn't known to anyone. And on the contrary, her name Esther represents Vanochi Haster Aster Ponai, concealed. Hashem concealing himself before us. Her name represents darkness. Hashem is hidden from us. And she was in a very bad way. She was a Yasoma, right? She had no parents. And so she represents the candle that's never ever been lit. And suddenly these two candles spring to life and they save the whole of Klal Yisrael. So Ki ato ta'ineri, that's a reference to Mordechai. We also find, for example, the Gemara says,
why do you think Mordechai's candle was like hidden and out? And
because his candle was lit in that he was well known as a tzaddik and a talmid chacham. Yeah, he was already well known. So, if, like, his candle had already been lit, but then of course Clausel fell into this terrible situation with Homon. It's as though his candle was put out, and then he led Clausel in turn to Shuvah, and therefore his candle is as though it was relit. Exactly. So these two candles. So he says that's Subshaki. You give light to my candle. Giving light to a candle means it's already been lit, and I'm just giving a bit more light to it. But Yagia Choshki means there's total Choshech, there's total darkness, and Yagia, suddenly that darkness is illuminated. So the darkness is a representation of Esther, right? She's in total darkness, and suddenly Yagia, she comes to light. She's the candle that's never ever been lit, and then suddenly is lit. Mordechai, Toyeneri, is giving light to the candle that's already given light in the past, and it's not, currently is extinguished, but now gives light again.
Esther kept a low profile in the palace, you know.
Absolutely,
low profile. Waiting for something to happen.
Correct. Very good. That's a very good point. Yeah, whereas Mordechai was high profile the whole time.
He was on the unshaken Issachar.
That's right, absolutely. Correct, yeah. So, and the Chasam Sofer also quotes the Gemara that Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kishish Yemini. Now, the Gemara in Megillah, it's Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara says, the Gemara dashes this, Mordechai ben Yair, Ishud Yayab Shushan Abir, Shemo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. And the Gemara discusses each of those names. Each name, rather than simply being an ancestor of Mordechai, is also a description of Mordechai. So it's Megillah Yud Beis Amud Beis, Kulon al Shemu Nikru. All those names, Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish, they all describe Mordechai himself. Ben Yair is Ben Sheheir Einayim Shel Yisrael B'Tefilaso. He illuminated the eyes of Klal Yisrael through his tefillah. So it's again an expression of light. Ben Sheheir Einayim. He brought light to the eyes of Klal Yisrael through his tefillah. So again, we see how Mordechai is represented as this Kiatar Toi Neri, gives light. Okay, that's...
The tefillahs had an effect.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. And he illuminated the eyes of Klal Yisrael. That's why it's called Ben Yair. Yair is an expression of light. Right. So Mordechai is this Ben, he's the son. Sheheir Einayim Shel Yisrael B'Tefilaso. He brought light to Klal Yisrael with his tefillah. Then the... Okay, maybe.
Otherwise, why say Ben Yoy, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we need to define who he is.
Would that be enough?
Yeah, it's actually not, strictly speaking, not all of them are fathers. For example, Kish is the father of Shaul. Actually, they're ancestors of Mordechai. All of them are ancestors of Mordechai. Yeah, okay. Okay, maybe we'll come back to this. Maybe we'll come back to this piece of Chasam Sofer a bit later based on another matter. Good. Let's come back now to the Yalkut Memnos. Yalkut Memnos also defines this Kiatar Toin Neri as a reference to Yoash. And we'll come and see who exactly is Yoash. And Hashem Elokai Yagia Choshki is a reference to Yehoyada. Okay, so here you need a bit of a background. All of this comes from Melachim Beis and it's Perek Yud Aleph. The story is an incredible story. You couldn't make it up. Let's start the story with a big Rasha who is one of the kings of Yisrael. Of course, after the split in the Melucha between Malchei Yehuda and Malchei Yisrael, who got a king, one of the kings of Yisrael, whose name is Omri, big Rasha. He had a son who was a much bigger Rasha, and that was Achav. Achav married someone who is even more wicked than himself. That was Izebel. Okay, and she and Achav and Izebel together introduced an enormous amount of horrendous Avodah Zarah into Eretz Yisrael. Now they had a daughter called Asalia, and so although Asalia is a princess from Malchus Yisrael, she, if you like, crossed the line and married a Melech of Yehuda. Do you know that? Yeah. So Asalia is the daughter of a king of Yisrael, daughter of Achav and his wife Izebel, and Asalia goes off and marries Yehoram, who is one of the Malchi Yehuda, okay, descendant of David HaMelech. And she, Yehoram, King Yehoram, and Asalia, Queen Asalia, had at least two children. Among them was a son called Achazia, who later became another king of Yehuda, and a daughter called Yehosheva. Now, Yehosheva was a tzaddikess, and she married a tzaddik who was a Kohen Gadol, and his name is Yehoyada. Okay, you've got loads of names here to play with, but I just wanted to give you this background. So you've got Yehosheva, yes, who's, if you like, a princess of Malchus Yehuda.
The daughter of...
daughter of Yehoram and Asalia. Yes. And she, Yehosheva, who marries... Yehosheva marries... Achav's granddaughter, correct, yeah. And Asalia and Yehoram also have a son called Ahazia. And Ahazia later became another king of Yehuda.
Yeah.
Okay?
He's probably a goodie, a good person.
I can't...
Good parents.
He had a terrible mother.
Didn't he have a mother?
Asalia was his mother. Asalia was a horrendous person.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. Of course, it's confusing. It's very confusing, all these names. I have written it down. I would not remember it without the family tree I've drawn. Yeah. Okay. So Asalia was terribly wicked. She married Yehoram. Yehoram is the king of Yehuda. They have at least two children: Ahaziah, who later became another king of Yehuda, and a daughter, Yehosheva. Okay. Let's deal with Yehosheva first. Yehosheva married Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. Okay, and he Yehoyada Kohen Gadol and his wife Yehosheva are both great tzaddikim.
Yeah,
okay, they're good people, despite the fact that she had a wicked mother.
Asalia.
Right, now one to Ahaziah became king, and after his father Yehoram died, Ahaziah became king, and Ahaziah had a son called Yoash, and it's this Yoash.
Grandmother, not mother.
Who's this?
You just said.
No, Yehosheva had a wicked mother.
Yehosheva was the wicked one.
And Asalia. Yes. Yeah. Here, you've got to see the family tree. It's nice. I don't know if you can see it here. On my scribbles. Right? Omri had a son called Achav. Achav married Yezebel. They had a daughter called Asalia. She married Yehoram, who was the king of Yehuda. And they had two children. Ahaziah, the son who later became a Melech Yehuda. I can't remember about Ahaziah. And Yehosheva, who married Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol. Okay, now, Ahaziah died, and I can't remember the circumstances of his death. And therefore, the next king you would expect would be his son, Yoash. Okay, but Asalia got it into her head that she wanted to reign. Mm-hmm. Okay, and she went about killing every single descendant of David HaMelech who was still alive. Okay? So she wiped the whole lot out. Her members of her own family by marriage, of her husband's family. How many did she kill? I've got no idea. Don't know how many she killed, right? Okay? At any rate, she wiped out many, okay? And she was desperate to kill her own son, Yoash. Can you imagine? Wanted to kill her own son Yoash in order that she could reign as queen. Completely. Well, wicked. She was wicked. Nutcase as well, but wicked. Okay? She was a wicked woman, right? She was a wicked woman. Now, what happened to Yoash? He was a very young baby, and he was rescued by his aunt Yehosheva and her husband Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. They rescued him and they hid him in the Beis HaMikdash. The last place Asalia would look for him would be inside the Beis HaMikdash itself. They hid him from his infancy. They hid him in the Beis HaMikdash. Where exactly did they hide him? Well, the Medrash Shochetov said...
From his own mother,
to save his life. Yeah. And also to keep Malchus David, to keep it going. He would be the continuity of Malchus based David. Yeah? But it Pasha, just a sarcastic Pasha, to keep him alive. He was a baby. Yeah. Rabbi Eliezer says, where did they hide him? They actually hid him in an attic in the Beis HaMikdash. It's one of the attics. And I think, according to one Gersa, they actually hid him in the Kodesh HaKodoshim. The one place Asali would not think of looking, right? In some kind of attic in the Kodesh HaKodoshim or something like that. Something like that. I don't know exactly. And Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmini says they hid him in one of the Ta'in. Ta'in are little rooms. There were lots of little rooms on the first and second story of the Beis HaMikdash, which is built up. A Tor, spelled Tof Aleph, means a small room. Tor is a small room. So they hid him in one of those small rooms. Then Rav Simon in the Medrash says that they're probably both right. And what they probably did was, according to Rabbi Eliezer, he was hidden in an attic in the Beis HaMikdash during the summer months. I guess it would be warmer in there. In the attic, probably not brilliant insulation, and so the room would be warm, and he would enjoy the warmth there. While in the winter months, it would be too cold for him to stay in an attic. And then, in the winter months, he would be in one of those other small rooms, following the opinion of Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani. So what Reb Simon says, he makes shalom in this machlokus. It looks like a machlokus where he was hidden. Yeah. But along comes Reb Simon, make shalom in that machlokus. He says, no, depending on what time of year it was either in the attic, in one of the attics of the Beis Hamikdash, or in one of the other rooms. It's two opinions, one in the attic, and the other opinion being one of the other rooms. Some other room, yeah.
Compromise comes.
Oh, exactly. So Reb Simon says, well, you know, it's probably depending on what time of year. Depending on the time of year. Yeah. At any rate, what we have here is that Yehoyada Kohen Gadol and his wife Yehosheva saved the life of Yoash. Okay? And don't forget that Yehosheva is an aunt of Yoash. Right, she's got a brother called Ahaziah, and Yoash is the son of Ahaziah. Yeah. So Yoash's life was saved by Yehosheva and Yehoyada.
His aunt,
yeah. And they brought him up, and when he was of an appropriate age, they crowned him king. Yeah. They crowned Yoash king to take over from that he would be able to continue Malchus Beis David, which he did. So Malchus Beis David was rescued through Yoash, and it was all thanks to Yehoyada and Yehosheva. The story does not have a happy ending, really, because although Yoash, his life was saved by his uncle and aunt, and he absolutely worshipped his uncle by marriage, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, and he did whatever Yehoyada told him to do, and Yehoyada taught him Torah. Once Yehoyada died, after Yehoyada died, that was a turning point in the life of Yoash. So Yoash was this very devoted Talmid of his uncle by marriage, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. And Yehoyada taught him Torah and kept him on the straight and narrow, having saved his life, kept him on the straight and narrow, taught him Torah, and crowned Yoash as the next king of Malchus Beis David. Then, in the fullness of time, Yehoyada died. And after Yehoyada died, Yoash turned away from the path of Frumkeit. So he was dependent on his Rebbe, Yehoyada. And once Yehoyada was out of the picture, he turned away from Yiddishkeit. And on one occasion, he wanted to bring some of the Zohar into the Beis HaMikdash. And the son of Yehoyada, Zechariah, who was the next Kohen Gadol, stood in the way of Yoash and said, you're not going to bring that Avodah Zorah in here and over my dead body. Whereupon Yoash killed Zechariah. Okay?
In the temple.
In the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a few things here. So first of all, Zechariah was the next Kohen Gadol, taking over from his father Yehoyada. So Yoash, the Melech, killed Zechariah, the Kohen Gadol. Add into all of that the ingredients of the fact that Zechariah happened to be his first cousin. Okay, he killed his first cousin. And Zechariah's parents had saved Yoash's life, and nevertheless, Yoash still killed their son, Zechariah.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's remarkable, though. Come on, it's still amazing. Now, this murder of Zechariah by Yoash is recorded in Megillas Eicha, where it says, Im Yehorig b'mikdash Hashem Kohen v'novi. Because the Kohen, that was the Kohen Gadol, Zechariah Kohen Gadol, and he was also a Novi, were killed by Yoash in the Mikdash. I hope I've got that passage right. I think I have. And that's the famous story of the blood of Zechariah never stopped bubbling. You remember the story? That was the blood of Zechariah. And it bubbled. I once did the Cheshbon for one of these Tinnim Shir, and we've mentioned it before. Yeah, sure, it's an Echa. That's how the blood bubbled, and Nebuzaradan came along, and it bubbled for hundreds of years. I did the whole cheshbon of how long that blood was bubbling for. It was hundreds of years, yeah? And they couldn't get rid of it. They tried to cover it, they tried to wipe it, nothing could stop it bubbling. And Nebuzaradan came along, and he slaughtered.
They couldn't remove the blood.
Get rid of it. As Nebuzaradan came along, and he said, I'm going to appease the blood of Zechariah, and he murdered thousands of Yidden in order to try and appease the blood of Zechariah. And eventually the blood is stopped, and
say, Jews killed you, I'll kill Jews.
That's right. Yes. And eventually Vuzaradon realized the enormity of what he'd done, and he himself did teshuva for all those murders. Anyway, it's just like it's a bit of a rollercoaster story. Okay. So, yeah, yes, so eventually the blood stopped babbling. Yeah. The blood to stop babbling.
Be there now, even.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what we have is... So connection to our pasuk is the Medrash HaTov, which says that Ki Ato Ta'ineri is a reference to Yoash. You illuminate my candle. That's Yoash. And Hashem illuminates my darkness. So the Medrash HaTov says Ki Ato Ta'ineri, reference to Yoash.
Hashem was good.
Yoash was good while his Rebbe Yehoyada was alive.
Before he became corrupt.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so the Medrash HaTov says Ki Ato Ta'ineri is a reference to the life of Yoash. I couldn't ask, what's the connection? And I saw it explained in the Yalkut Miyam Noes.
Yeah.
And it's actually very simple. The penny didn't drop in me. What's the pshat? The continuity of Malchus Beis David was assured through Yoash. So Ki Ato Ta'ineri, you bring light to my candle because the Malchus Beis David will continue in the form of Yoash. That was the thing. So, and the second half of the pasuk, Hashem Kayakeh Choshki is being referenced to Yehoyada and also Yehosheva, his wife, who looked after and saved the life of Yoash. So that's wonderful. You bring light to my darkness, being a reference to these two tzaddikim. Absolutely, yes.
Did Yoash have a child before it became bad? I'm just thinking for the continuation.
He probably did. I don't know what stage. He probably did.
The Malchus
Beis David continues. I can't remember who the next king was after Yoash, but I didn't write it down. But yeah, but Malchus Beis David continued. Yeah.
Through his descendants.
Through Yoash, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, quoting from Ves Medrashim, I've got this lovely, lovely sefer given to me by Reb Shlomo Moshe Greenfeld, who was a colleague in Pardes House, and I once did him a tiny favour, and he gave me this incredible sefer of Medrashim on Tehillim, not knowing that I give the Tehillim here. Okay, so he brings many, many Medrashim here, and he quotes here a Medrash which is in... Yes, he quotes it from Medrash Tehillim from Perek Nun Aleph Pasuk Aleph. So we'll start. Let's start with the pasuk in Mishlei. Actually, the pasuk in Mishlei, it's in chapter Yud Ches, pasuk Kaf Aleph, says, "Moves v'chayim biyad loshen." Moves v'chayim biyad loshen. Death and life are both in the power of the tongue. In the power of the tongue. What does it mean? What's the connection to what we're learning here? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Person's tongue has the power and the ability to bring him to Olam Haba." Moves v'chayim, either bring a person to Moves or to Chayim, and here we're referring to Chayei Olam Haba. Why? Because David HaMelech, after he took Bathsheba, and you remember that Nosson HaNovi came and gave him a big Musar Drasha for it. He gave him the mashal of the poor man with his little animal, little goat. After he took Bathsheba, and. Yeah, it was dodgy. It didn't look good.
Yeah.
It didn't look good. So after David HaMelech took Bathsheba, Nosson HaNovi came and gave David a big Musar Drasha. And this is in Shmuel Beis, chapter Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel, where after hearing the Musar Drasha from Nosson HaNovi, David does instant teshuvah. Vayomer David al Nosson chatasi l'Hashem. Instant recognition. Yes, you're right. I'm in the wrong. I've sinned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that was an instant reaction. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when David said those words, Chatosi Lashem, his tongue saying Chatosi Lashem brought him to Olam Haba. It earned him Olam Haba. Why? Because he was in a bad situation there after taking Bathsheba. He got the Musar Drasha from Nosson, did Teshuvah straight away. That brings him to Olam Haba. And the pshat is that, and that's reflected in our pasuk, Ki Ato Ta'ineri, you give light to my candle. David HaMelech is saying, you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, guided me to do teshuvah. And that is Maves V'chayim Biyad Loshen. You got my tongue to say the right words and to do teshuvah, and that brings me Chayim, that brings me Olam Haba. And therefore, I thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for guiding me in that direction. And with that, you've illuminated my life. That's how he says, because you illuminate my candle, you illuminate my darkness. And how? By guiding me towards doing that teshuvah. Okay, now let's have a look at the Medrash Rabbah in Bamidbar. Look at this Medrash Rabbah. Bamidbar, Perek Tesvav Os Hei. Says the Midrash Rabbah here in Bamidbar, Perek Tesvav Oshei. Says the Midrash Rabbah, Zeh Shama Kosev, this Pshat in the Pasuk brings our Pasuk, Ki Atota Ineri, Omri Yisrael Lefna HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klal Yisrael Turn to Hashem and Yisrael Benu Shalom, Lanu Ata Omer, Shenoi Lefanecha. Are you telling us to light up before you? Talking about lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash and in the Mishkan. You've given us a command to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Why on earth should we do that? Atzohu, Ora Shel Olam. You are the light of the world. V'ha'ora Dora Etzach, and light resides with you. And the Medrash brings the Pasuk to prove it. V'ata Omer, and nevertheless you say to us, El Mul Panei HaMenorah, Ya'iri Shivas HaNeres, that you tell us to light the menorah. Why should we do that? Why is that? You are the source of light, and you're telling us that we need to light the menorah. Why is that? And the answer, and the Amalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem replies, Lo Shani Tzorech Lechem. I don't really need you, and I don't need your light. Why am I telling you to light the menorah? Ela Shetoir Li Kederech Sheheyaretz Lechem. I want you to light up the menorah for me, like I give light to you. Lama, why? La'alos. Or la'alos or la'ha'alos, different versions, eschem b'fnei ha'umos. I want to raise you up in front of all the nations of the world, she'yi romim, that the nations of the world should turn to Kleinus and say, wow, ru'u, see, heich yisol me'irin l'mi shehu me'ir l'chal olam. See how Kleinusol lights up the menorah for the one who lights up the whole world. And so the pshat is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I give you light and I give light to the whole world. I don't want you to need to be beholden to me. So therefore I'm going to ask you to do a small favor for me. Light the menorah for me. I give light to you, I give light to the whole world. Once you light the menorah for me, then you won't feel eternally beholden to me. You won't feel that you need to repay my favor of giving light to you. And then the Midrash goes on and gives a very, very beautiful mashal. A mashal of two men who are walking on a journey. One of them is blind and the other one is sighted. And the sighted one helps the blind man all the way. Right? He leads him, he helps him out on the difficult journey. Then when they arrive at the place where they're going to be staying, the sighted man says to the blind man, could you just do me a small favor, please? We're arriving here in our destination, but it's nighttime and it's dark and I can't see. Could you please light a lamp for me? Once you light the lamp for me, then I'll be able to see. Now, why on earth does the sighted man ask the blind man to light the candle? Surely the sighted makes sense for the sighted man to light the candle for himself. So he says, the blind man isn't going to get any benefit from the candle anyway. Yeah. So
the pshat shouldn't feel obliged.
That's it. Thank you for giving me that word. I didn't think of that word. Obliged. He didn't want the blind man to feel eternally obliged because the sighted man helped the blind man throughout the journey. Yeah. And if the blind man never does any favours for the sighted man, he'll feel eternally in his debt. So he says, you know what? Do me a favour. Light the lamp for me. Could you please light the lamp for me? Then you won't feel obliged and eternally in my debt. So really, the sighted man is doing a favour for the blind man by asking the blind man to do a favor for the sighted man. It's like so that the blind man doesn't need to feel eternally in debt. So it's the same thing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lights up the world and gives a light to Kalani soul. So he says, you know what, I'd like you please to light the menorah on my behalf. You light the menorah so you don't feel eternally indebted to me. That's the Medrash Rabbah here on this. There's another piece of Medrash which is brought in the Yalkut Shimoni into Tzaveh, Os Shin Ayin Ches, and it's brought here in my sefer here, my Likut HaMedrashim, and it's as follows. Oh, says the Yalkut Shimoni. Normally, what type of oil would you use for fuel, and what type of oil would you use in food, like for cooking? So if you've got two grades of oil, a higher quality and lower quality, you'd use the higher quality for your food. Mm-hmm. And you'd use the lower quality for your lamp. Yeah. Okay? But when it comes to the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, or when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, now I'd like you to do the opposite, please. You need oil for two things. You need oil for Korban Mincha, which is where the flour is mixed with oil. Yeah. And you need oil for the menorah. Mm-hmm. The oil for the menorah, that's got to be Shemen Zayis Zoch. tip-top quality oil. Shemen Zayis, it's got to be olive oil, Zoch, top quality oil. Yeah? Shemen Zayis, Zoch, Hayunosin Amora. That goes for the menorah, that's for the lamp. While the lower grade quality oil, olive oil again, though, of course, was used for the menachos. Okay, so and the Medrash relates this to our Pasuk, Amadavid Neri, you illuminate my lamp, i.e. through the menorah. Top quality oil for the menorah, lower quality oil for the menachos. Quite the opposite from what a person would do. Mincha is a food product. It's oil with flour, typically with wheat flour. So it's a food product. So the Korban Mincha, it's the opposite way around to us. Human beings would use top quality for food, lower quality oil for a lamp. Hashem says the opposite way around. The menorah for the lamp, that's got to be tip-top quality oil. Hashem is only the best quality oil. When they used to squeeze the olives in the basement brush, when they used to squeeze out the olives for the olive oil, I think only the first drop, I might have this wrong, as far as I remember, it's a Mishnah Menachos, only the first or maybe the second as well drop of oil from any one olive was usable for the menorah.
So it's got to be the best quality.
Top quality for the menorah. Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe it's just, it could have been, I didn't check it up, maybe it's just the very first drop of oil from the olive.
From each olive.
No, you wouldn't throw it away, that'd be a waste.
I'm saying you don't use the first drop.
Yeah, the first drop would go for the menorah, and I think second or subsequent drops could be used for Korban Mincha. Okay, so it's the opposite. Absolutely. It's the other way around. Oh, now, so the Chasam Sofer, in his Pirush Antonim, brings all this as part of it. He says, because the menorah is a representation of the Torah. We know the menorah, Singer Michanukah, we know the menorah represents the Torah. Harot Selachkim, the Gemara says in Bava Kama, Harot Selachkim, a person wants to become a Chacham Yadrim, he should daven facing a little bit towards the south, because on the southern wall of the Beis Mikdash is where the menorah was. The menorah represents Torah. Kiner Mitzvah V'Sorah Ur, Torah is Ur, it's a Pasukin. Kiner Mitzvah V'Sorah Ur, it's a Pasukin Mishlei. So the menorah represents Torah. Also, the beginning of Baloscha, the Chumash HaMikdavah, explains how the menorah in the Beis Mikdash has got seven lamps on it, and there are seven chachmas in the world, like maths and music and astronomy and medicine, and one of the chachmas of the world is the Torah, and the Torah represents the middle light on the menorah. All the lights, all the wicks in the menorah in the Beis Mikdash were tilted towards the central light, because the Torah is the central light. So the menorah is overall a representation of Torah. The menorah represents Torah, whereas the Shulchan represents Gashmius. The Shulchan represents Gashmius, so if a person wants to daven for Parnassa, he should daven facing towards the north, because the northern wall of the Beis Mikdash had the Shulchan, Lechem Aponim was on the Shulchan, yeah. Likewise, says the Chasam Sofer, a Korban Mincha also represents food and Gashmius, because Korban Mincha was edible. Okay, the Kemitzah, that small fistful, was taken and burnt on the Mizbeach, but the rest was eaten by the Kohanim. It was a food. It was some kind of pancake or something like that. Yeah, there are, I think, 15 different types of Korban Mincha, but they're a representation of food. Yeah, so he says as follows: the Shulchan represents Parnassa, which is on the northern wall of the Beis Hamikdash. But the Chasam Sofer says the Korban Mincha also is a representation of Parnassa and Achila and Gashmius. That's the thing, yeah? Because the Korban Mincha was eaten. It was edible, absolutely. The Kohanim would eat the majority of a Korban Mincha. So he says as follows. The menorah represents Torah. Torah is pure Ruchnius. The Korban Mincha represents Gashmius, Achila. So he says, for the menorah, for that we have to have the best oil. Only the best. First drop from an olive, that goes for the menorah. Where subsequent drops, that can be used for Korban Mincha, because that's a representation of Gashmius. Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be the best food, the same, you know.
That's right. It doesn't have to be going. That's right. The oil for the mincha doesn't need to be as good as the oil for the menorah.
Yeah.
And then he connects it to the pasuk right at the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh. V'atot Tetzaveh Bnei Yisrael. The Parshas Tetzaveh begins with the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. So it's Shemos and it's chapter Kaf Zayin Pasuk Kaf. Right, the first pasuk of Parshas Tetzaveh. V'atot Tetzaveh Bnei Yisrael. V'yikrei lecha Shemin Zayisoch Kosis Lama Erla Halis Ne'etomei. Talking about lighting the menorah. Okay. you've got to take Shemiz Aisach. Now, the pasuk begins with Atot Tzave, you command. Hashem's talking to Moshe. That's very odd, because throughout all the other mitzvahs of the Mishkan, the Pesukim say, Vasisa, you should make. Hashem says to Moshe, Vasisa, you should make. Moshe didn't make it himself. His Shalichim did it. Betzal made the Mishkan. Yeah? So it was all done through a Shliach. Whereas here it says, V'atot etzave, you, it's got to be you, Moshe. V'atot etzave. And it was like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is makpid that the mitzvah of lighting the menorah must come through Moshe. Why dafka through Moshe? So he quotes the Gemara in connecting it again to the light of the menorah and oil, because when the Gemara says in Sotah, and I didn't check it up, it's near the end of the first Pekah of Sotah, that when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the Pasuk says, Vaytera oso ki tov hu. She saw that he was good. His mother, Yocheved, saw that he was good. Ki tov hu, and the Gemara there relates it to Vayar Elokim Esar ki tov. Hashem saw the light. When Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Nismale kol habayis ora. The entire house was filled with light. So, you know, wow, this baby's going to do it for us. Nismale kol habayis ora. So Moshe, again, is a representation of ora. So that's why the Chasam Sofer says, that's why the mitzvah of lighting the menorah was very specific. It's got to come through you, Moshe, not through anyone else. You're the one to instruct Aaron about the menorah. Because Moshe represents light. Yeah, Moshe was all Torah, and Moshe represents light. Nismale kol habayis ora. The whole house was filled with light when he was born. Yeah.
You're told to light the menorah.
So that's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's a very long, long piece of Chasam Sofer, and I did not understand all of it. But that's how he connects. There's a menorah. It's got to have best quality oil because the menorah represents Torah, while Gabon Mincha has lower quality oil because that represents Achila and Gashmius. One other small thing that the Chasam Sofer notes in this pasuk, and he explains it, but I didn't understand the explanation, and that is in our pasuk, Ki atot tot in neiri, you light up my candle. Hashem nekai yagia choshki, Hashem will bring light to my darkness. Is that the pasuk actually changes? Ki atot tot in neiri is using a pronoun. Ator, you, and then we get the noun Hashem Elokai Yagia Choshki. It seems to be the wrong way around. Why? Normally, you would say the noun followed by the pronoun, right? Avram came into the room. He sat down. Yeah. Here we've got Ator first, followed by Hashem Elokai,
first the pronoun, then the noun.
Exactly, and. Yeah. And it does give an explanation, which I think I understood it, but I'm not sure. I won't say it. I'm not sure. He quotes the Gemara Megillah, Daf Yudalad Amud Aleph, where it says that when Achashverosh removed his ring as a symbol to Haman to say that the Gezerah can go ahead, the Gezerah against the Yidden can go ahead, that little act of the removal of Achashverosh's ring did more for Klal Yisrael than, I think, 48 Nevi'im. 48 Nevi'im had been telling Klal Yisrael they've got to do Teshuvah, and Klal Yisrael didn't take any notice. Along comes Haman and Achashverosh, and Haman makes the suggestion of wiping out the Jews, and Achashverosh takes off his ring and says, yeah, good idea, and I'm agreeing to this. Oh, that drove Klal Yisrael into a frenzy of Teshuvah. Okay, so based on that, they had no choice. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So he says that Ta'ineri means you're lighting up my candle. That's the candle of representation of Mordechai, which is lit and then goes out and then is lit and then goes out. In other words, it doesn't need quite so much force to get the candle going. And therefore, we don't need Hashem's name specifically on that half of the pasuk. Just the word Atah is enough. Atah is sufficient because we are rekindling the candle of Mordechai, which had already been lit previously. Whereas when it comes to the second half of the pasuk, Yagia Choshki means there's been absolute darkness and now we're illuminating that darkness from scratch. That's the candle that never has been lit at all. That's the representation of Esther, who represents Hesterponim, the hidden face of Hashem, and she was a downtrodden Yesomar, and and she didn't. She wasn't a well-known person as being a tzaddikah. She had a low profile. So for that, Yagi Achoshki, we're now lighting up the candle that has never been previously lit. For that, Hashem Elokai, you need the boost of Hashem's name. And not just one name of Hashem, but two, Hashem Elokai. So that gives that half the pasuk a bit more of a boost. And therefore that's a reference to Esther. That's how he learns. It's a long, long piece of Chasam Sofer. It's fascinating. And he connects in all this business of Moshe being light, this monokalabais ora, with the light of the menorah. Hence, you need better quality oil for the menorah than you need for the korban mincha.
Yeah, because Esther was dormant. We needed Hashem to light her flame. But Mordechai was already flying around, so to speak. He was already alight.
Correct.
Therefore, only a pronoun is enough.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. Of course, it's odd that another thing that Chasam Sofer notes, just a small thing, and that is the word atah, is in the second person. Ki atah, atah yineri. The first of the pasuk is in the second person. Hashem Elokai Yagi Achoshki is in the third person. Hashem, he will light up my darkness. So the first half of the pasuk is in the second person. The second half of the pasuk is in the third person. Strange thing. And he may have explained that. I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay, so we'll get to a decent stopping place. There's a piece of Yalkut Shimoni. Oh, I'll take it from here. Yalkut Shimoni, which is in on Melachim Aleph Os Kufpei base, and I've got it quoted here in my safe of Likut of Medrashim. B'noeg Sheba Olam, what's the norm in the world, is you've got a human king, he's got his table with his lamp. Mm. Now, which side of the table will his lamp be on? Mm. So typically, for a human being, the lamp will go on the left-hand side. Now, we're talking, when we say a lamp, we're not talking about modern electrical lamp, we're talking about a candle, right? Mm. And it says, for a human being, Melech Basav Adam, where would he put his table? Who knows? In Hamanura Bismola, he'd have the lamp on the on his left, and the on the left hand side of the table. Why? Doesn't give a reason. And the only reason I could think of is because most people are right handed. His right hand will be more active. He'll be moving his right hand more. And if the lamp is on the right hand side, he runs the risk of knocking over the lamp. Therefore, he'll have the lamp on his left hand side, clear of his right arm. I assume that's a pshat, yeah? Avol bevesa mikdosh enokin, but it's much different. Ela hamenorah hoisan esunah mimino shel shulchan. The menorah was on the right-hand side of the shulchan. Now, I don't quite understand what that means, other than what it probably means is from the perspective of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In other words, if you'd be standing like Kavayochal HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, facing towards the rest of the Beis HaMikdosh, so if, for example, you'd have your back to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we don't do, when the Kohen Gadol walks out of the Beis HaMikdash, he's got to walk out backwards. So not to turn his back on the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Exactly. Yeah, similar. So it's not to turn his back to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But if we imagine the Kodesh HaKadoshim being a representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's abode, so he is facing outward from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the menorah is on his right and the shulchan is on his left. Okay, because the menorah was on the southern wall of the Mikdash and the Shulchan was on the northern wall of the Beis Mikdash. So if you've got your back to the west, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be with situated in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you've got the menorah on his right, on the southern wall, and the Shulchan on his left, on the northern wall. So he says, the menorah is on the right-hand side of the Shulchan, and I think that's what it means, but I'm not sure. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our light. Hashem doesn't need light. Hashem is the light of Klal Yisrael. Brings our pasuk. Hashem. Ki'atah to'i neri Hashem, running the pasuk to the two halves of the pasuk together. Ki'atah to'i neri Hashem, you're the one who illuminates my candle. In other words, Hashem is the light of Klal Yisrael. Hashem doesn't need the light of the menorah, and that goes hand in hand with the other medrash. Why does Hashem ask us to light the menorah? So we shouldn't feel obliged, and we shouldn't be eternally in his debt. We are doing something for him, the moshel of the blind man and the sighted man. Oh, here's another medrash from the Medrash Rabbah, and it's in Parashas Emor, and it's Perek Lamed Aleph Os Dalet. Dova Acher, another pshat. Tzaves Bnei Yisrael. This is the pesukim in Parashas Emor where Hashem commands us to light the menorah. Again, talking about lighting the menorah. Tzavis ben Yisrael, what's the pshat in the pasuk? Bar Kapora Pasach, Bar Kapora explained the pasuk in Chumash about lighting the menorah without pasuk in Tehillim. Ki atah ta'i neiri. You illuminate my lamp. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'odom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to mankind and says, Nercha biyadi v'neiri biyadacha. This is very, very moving. Nercha biyadi. Your candle is in my hand. V'neiri biyadacha. And my candle is in your hand. What does it mean? Nercha biyadi. Your candle is in my hand. In other words, I control... Hashem says, I control your candle. Shenema, a pasuk in Mishlei, chapter Kaf, pasuk Kaf Zayin, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The neshama of man is the candle of Hashem. In other words, our lives are in his control. He switches on and he switches off. Yeah? That's Ner Chobi Yodi. Your candle is in my hand because I'm keeping you alive. And at the same time, Neiri biyadcha, my candle, that's the light of the menorah, biyadcha, that's in your hand. Lahalos ner tomid, to keep the light on the menorah going. Ela amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im he'aretz neiri, if you light my candle, you light the menorah in the Beis Mikdash, hareini meir nercha, I will give you life. I'll light up your candle, I'll give you life. And this is a very moving thing, but you can see Bar Kapora brings it from our pasuk. He starts off his explanation, lighting the menorah, from our pasuk. You light up my candle, but why? Because you are keeping me alive. Good. To be continued. Yes, Hashem, next week.